All right, folks, welcome back to this Mountain West Wire football podcast, UNLV Rebels preview. How's that sound, Matt? Kennerly joining me. We are now three teams away from finishing this thing.
Yes, sir.
Before we get to actual football, I'm Jeremy Moss, if you didn't know. Website MWWire.com. Where you can find our top 52 countdown this year, our Media Day projections. We just did a Media Day podcast over at wherever you find it, radio.com, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker. Anywhere you find a podcast, we're there. Apple Podcast, if you are, I'll say this, lucky enough to have an iPhone, Matt, or whatever that means. But if you have an iPhone, they're trendy, right? Still, can we say that?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I use Android devices.
Same. So I'm just saying, it's a thing. I see them out there. I'm just
I
saying.
just you still see commercials, so I'm just gonna say
Yeah,
yes.
they're still out there. So, all right. So let's get to the show here. UNLV Rebels. Like I said, we have three teams left. We have UNLV today. If you're interested, we have Hawaii and Boise State over the next 2 weeks in some order determined by you, the Twitter followers at MWCY who vote on this stuff. And Matt, do you have how close the vote was this week?
I believe UNLV edged it out by a grand total of 2 votes.
It's basically 30. It was basically the not rounding error, but you get the one third vote. It was
Yeah.
what, 34, 33, 33,
Something like that, yeah.
and Rebel fans came through. So that's pretty sweet, right? Good for them. They want to know about their team. Who? Let's just get to it. The biggest news so far, it's glad we met. Like I said, we didn't talk about them last month in June or even early July, but they have a coaching change who new offensive coordinator due to health reasons, and that's not a good thing. So their coach, I'm pulling up his name. I forget his name for some reason, as I told you 10 seconds ago. It's a Coach
You were
Cotton,
referring
right?
to Barney Cotton,
I
the
knew his
offensive
last.
coordinator and tight ends coach.
And tight ends. I knew it was Cotton. I didn't want to mistake the first name, which I did. So he's having, unfortunately, heart issues, or he's had heart issues, needs a heart transplant. And now, I guess it's one of our big questions, like who's going to call the plays? Is it going to be a different offensive coach? Is Tony Sanchez taking over? I don't know if that's officially been decided yet.
I don't know that there's been an official decision, and one of our questions from one of our followers on Twitter was wondering if we had any inside information on who the new tight ends coach was going to be. My only real response is I went to Twitter just and mostly jokingly to see if Tony Sanchez had followed any new tight ends coaches recently. It was from at Bleed Rebel Red, by the way, so thank you for that question. I honestly don't know, but he or she threw out the name of, Ben Cotton, the former Nebraska tight end, and who also happened to be a former graduate assistant for the Rebels. Could be possible.
Here's the thing. They're not going to hire somebody at this point in the year.
Well, see, that's the thing though,
Or
because Chris Benigni
can
said
they?
about
That's mean, can they hire him too? Because you only have a certain amount of coaches.
Chris Benigni of The Athletic had said back on the 23rd, we're recording this on Sunday, the 28th of July, that they had the person in mind that they wanted to hire. They were just kind of going through the HR process.
Which means this job has to be open until July 31st to meet all requirements at the state and local level.
Presumably, yeah.
So I guess that answers that question. It can because there are, was it just 10 coaches you can keep full time on staff?
But to answer that first question of who's actually going to call plays, it's the guy that they are promoting in the interim, Garen Justice, who spent last year as the run game coordinator. There was some early questions as to whether it was going to be him or Tony Sanchez calling the shots. It looks like it's going to be Justice.
Okay. It wouldn't be if they're making a hire, like it wouldn't be, it'd be somebody within the program making the calls, like calling plays. And I'm guessing with this, I'm probably assume Sanchez have a little bit more hand in offense than he would have, just a little bit, because it's a new guy calling the plays. New, basically a new offensive coordinator as well. And so we'll see how that changes. And another interesting, not interesting, but I guess we'll keep going to players missing. Max Gilliam is going to be out for a while. So the backup is going to be was a redshirt freshman, I believe.
That would be Kenyon Oblad.
So remember what happened last year with Armani Rogers. Just don't let that happen again. Don't get hurt because that may that Max Gilliam did okay, not great, did okay a little bit, but you don't want a guy who's never started to have to come into play extended amount of time if Armani Rogers gets injured. So that could be a big deal because you pointed out last year going through like the effectiveness of Rogers compared to Gilliam. Even though Rodgers' throwing ability, he's more of a dual threat guy, so his throwing numbers aren't going to be great, but he can run very well. We saw how different the offense was when he wasn't in there because the running game suffered for a couple weeks, passing game a little bit overall. And so, as you know, it's a huge deal to keep him healthy if they want to get to a bowl game this year.
Can we take another step back for just a moment?
Oh, what do we miss here? What's up?
Well, it's not necessarily that we, it's not necessarily that we've missed anything, but I feel like there's an important question that at least that I want to pose from my perspective. You know, talking about all of these different kind of little developments that we'll get more into detail. But just one big question, because that's how we've been kind of framing all these podcasts so far. And for me, with regards to UNLV, it's this. Did they miss their chance to break through last year?
No.
No?
Injuries didn't help that. I would say no. Because
Because
if you had Rodgers the full year, they I argue you could say 2 years ago because the Howard game, you know what I mean? Like you go back 2 years ago because if they beat Howard in a bowl game, I know injuries are fluky and inconsistent and not like the norm. You can't really bank on being healthy or not healthy. I think had they made a bowl game the year before, who knows what would happen last year? Maybe the exact same thing happened, but we would have seen like, hey, they're good enough to make a bowl game. I don't think that. Because here's my reason why I'll let you get in as well. Fresno State's the favorite, as we know. New quarterback, new lose Jeff Allison, new offensive coordinator. San Jose State not going to be much better. Nevada has quarterback ish, not issues, but a quarterback question marks, I should say. If you look at San Diego State, I'll say new quarterback. Their defense will be fine. Offensive line. Reloading essentially new players. So I still think there's a chance this year, especially with guys who they have back on this team. I don't think they missed their chance, but again, it's not I'm not going to say they're going to win eight or nine games this year. They're me missing their chance or making their chances going to a bowl game. Step one.
And see that, and that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, did they miss their chance to do that? And the only reason I want to pose it that way is because if we want to start by just looking back at how last year unfolded, it did look for a time, particularly in September, like this would be a different kind of Rebels team. And if you go back and look at Bill Connelly's S&P Plus profiles that he put together throughout last year, after 5 weeks, the Rebels had jumped from 104th in S&P Plus overall to 76th.
Pretty good move.
But over the course of the rest of the season, they basically went back to where they started and they ended 106th.
Yeah, but again, they could point that to losing your best player for however many weeks. How many weeks is Rodgers always out for half the season?
He only played in 4 games
Yeah,
last year.
so that's numbers are kind of. That's why they did so well the first half of the year when he played the 4 games. They played well when he's gone. It's like you mentioned one of the podcasts last year, and I mentioned just now. You point out the efficiency numbers when he's not in there, they're not very good. And so I'd say that's more a health thing than. You know, as a team thing.
I mean, I just think that when you look back at what the team did especially well, you could make the argument that they should not have fallen apart as much as they did, you know, and you know, injuries did play a part and losing Rodgers did play a part, but in the games that he played, they averaged 6.35 yards per carry, for instance, right? We know that's what the Rebels wanted to do. And that was really the heart of their offense last year because they finished 13th nationally in rushing S&P Plus. In the games that he didn't play, though, they averaged just over 4 yards a carry.
Part of that was
The
like, did you,
offense should not have been dropping off that much because of one guy.
sure, because remember what Lexington Thomas did garbage and Coach Sanchez had to kick his butt to are saying, are you trying? Are you actually trying out there? They sh
And
he's that good
that
enough
doesn't
player, it
even
shouldn't matter. You know what I mean?
And that
Like,
doesn't even account for the fact that the defense, when you look at the percentile performances, had exactly 2 games last year where they were above the 50th percentile. And that was in their win against Prairie View A&M
Well, should
and
be.
in their season-ending win against Nevada. That
Okay.
was it.
Well, it's not like this team's known for a defensive powerhouse, even when they are at full strength.
So I just think that, you know, and we could start diving into these questions individually a little more deeply, but to me, it's just like there's so many questions at this point about how things are going to come together that it just makes me wonder whether last year was their best opportunity.
I'd argue the year before, but what I'm saying today, also things to consider: new AD in town. Is Sanchez going to last another year with the new athletic director? Like last year, it's like they hired. I think they hired her what, late in the year, I believe. It's like, well, we'll look at all the programs. She sticks around. As I not vouch for him, but recommend is that's probably the best move to do. Why? You don't want to repeat the cycle over and over. Hire a new coach every 4 years. This is year five. He needs to probably make a bowl game to keep his job. But if they keep San Diego 5-7 and they have a couple b bad breaks, and they show some sort of improvement. And here's the reason why. Well, I'll get into it now. You don't want a new head coach after this. You're not saying they will. But the reasons why he wouldn't, Armani Rodgers is going to be back for another year. Why would you want to bring a brand new coaching staff, brand new everything, when you have a senior quarterback who we know can be really good when he's out there? And he has some good young wide receivers we'll get to. The running game has been good the past, going back to Tim Cornette, it's been pretty good the past 5+ years. It's been solid for this team. So why would you want to start over again? So I'm pretty sure he'll be back for year 6, assuming he doesn't fall apart. And that'd be the smart move for Sanchez. But for him, there's still that pressure of wanting to get to a bowl game because he's never done it before. And it'll be 5 straight years without a bowl game, and going back to whenever they had the last time, went to that whatever bowl game in Dallas they went to versus North Texas, I think, about 6-8 years ago, something like that.
Well, I mean, you could say that, but the athletic director, Desiree Reed-Francois, did put out a statement at some point in the offseason. She gave Tony Sanchez, I don't know if you want to call it a vote of confidence because that makes it sound like a negative thing, but it was like a week after the season ended, right? But her statement said they are looking forward to a successful 2019 football season, including bowl eligibility.
So for you, okay, that's what they said. So she confirms right there, bowl eligibility is considered a successful season.
Yeah.
Is that what you think should be a successful season for them?
I mean, I think at this point you kind of have to.
Okay, we'll get to our wins loss. We'll save that to the end because we're talking about schedule. But so basically, it's almost bowl game or bust for Sanchez, right?
It is.
So is that your official take on this team then? For him?
Yeah, and for better or for worse, it's all going to start at the quarterback position.
Which Armani Rodgers, what was he in our I should have it up. What was he in my QB rankings? Was he third?
I do not have that in front of me.
I'll pull it up here because we did the QB rankings, but as we noted already like 5 times this podcast, when he plays, they're pretty good, right, Matt? Or at least let me rephrase that. They move the ball better.
For the most part, they did, yeah. And especially like that number that I threw out as far as the running attack, because we know that's what they want to do. And they were one of those teams last year that was running the ball almost as much as any team in the country that wasn't a service academy team. So I think you have to start there, and you have to account for him not only as a passer, but as a runner as well. And if you adjust for sacks, he was remarkable as a runner. Mm-hmm. You know, he was averaging 7.9 yards per carry. He had a shade over 8 highlight yards per opportunity, which is basically just when the offensive line is doing its job and he's getting to the second level, how many extra yards after the first 5 is he getting? And he had an opportunity rate of 57%. So he was getting those 5 yards on well over half of his carries last year, but he only had 79 rushes, which is in part of the fact that he only saw time in 4 games. So I think the first big question is, and this was a question that was also posed to us, what's the over under on the number of games that he's actually going to see this year?
Did he miss any games his redshirt freshman year?
I don't believe so, but he only saw playing time in 9 games on route to becoming the freshman of the year for the conference.
So, and it was a foot injury, correct?
Yes, it was a toe injury, if I remember correctly.
Okay, so like a turf toe. See, here's the thing, it's hard to predict. It's not like a soft tissue injury where, oh, that could happen again. It's like a kind of a broken bone thing, like a toe thing. It's probably, I guess, turf toe type deal could be an issue, but it's a hard number to put on for that type of injury. Like if you had a hamstring or pulled a muscle or Achilles or something really severe, that could be a bigger deal. I'll put the over under. I'll just go high and say like 10. I think he can play at least 10 games this year. I don't see why not.
See, I'm almost wondering, and we've talked about this with a couple of other quarterback situations in the conference, particularly Air Force, where if you need to rely on a quarterback to run that often, are you going to need more than one quarterback to be ready? And if that's the case, if we know Gilliam is at least going to be out for the first part of the season, mm-hmm. I'm expecting him to be the quarterback, the backup when he gets back.
Yeah.
And he got better as the year went along. Last year, he did end up throwing 14 touchdowns against 8 interceptions. And perhaps it's worth noting that Gilliam was better at throwing the football, even if he wasn't quite as prolific running it. He completed 55% of his passes. Armani Rodgers very clearly took a step back as a passer last year. He had a higher sack rate that was right near 11%. Yikes. And he completed only 44% of his passes. So, if Rodgers misses time, and I think based off of last year, for as prolific as he is, if they, if they're planning on letting him run the ball, nearly 20 times a game?
Yikes.
I mean, that was the pace that he was on last year, if I remember correctly.
For a non-option team, that's ridiculous.
He's 6'5", 225, but that's still a lot for any quarterback to do.
Remember, he's supposed to be like the Cam Newton guy. That's what we've been told a couple years ago.
And so, I mean, I'm inclined to go a little bit lower than 10. I'm inclined to say he's probably going to miss, I don't know, three or four games,
Interesting.
which would be right around eight or nine games in all, you know? So I just, if there's another drop off or another situation where this offense has to adjust what it's doing, whether it's with Gilliam or if Oblad has to come in, and he didn't really look prepared all that much when he saw the field last year. He only threw five passes, but he only completed one of them, you know? What's that offense going to look like?
Here's what I'll say confidently. If he does not play all 12 games, there's zero chance of making a bowl game, meaning Armani Rodgers.
I think that's fair to say, yeah.
And if, say, the injury bug gets him, it'd be better off, obviously, the second half of the year than first half, because I'd rather have Gilliam than this guy who threw five passes last year as your starting quarterback for even a game. And so we'll see how that goes. But I was going to say, if he misses one game, at least, yeah, he needs to play the whole season if they're going to have any chance to make a bowl game, because they're a drastically different team when he's not on the field and compared to on the field.
So I'm going to pose a follow-up question to you then.
Go for it.
After you adjust for sacks last year per game, he averaged 204.5 yards of total offense,
Okay.
running and throwing.
Okay.
Is he over or under that per game this year?
He better be over.
So how much over? I think that's going to be the big question of how far this team can go. Just
True.
for the sake of comparison, in 2017, and this is without adjusting for sacks or anything like that, but he was at 225 yards per game as a freshman. So let me reset that bar. Is he over or under 225 as far as total
What
offense?
did he average in rushing last year? I mean, it is like what per game? Do you have that in front of you, real quick?
Well, let's see. He ran for 2,626. So if he played in four games, that was roughly 150 or so, 160.
A game?
Yeah.
Cool. He should not be running for that many yards per game.
Well, that's because he was extremely efficient as a runner. He was averaging almost 8 yards a carry.
I would say he said 225.
As a freshman, he was at 225.
And you want me to say about 250?
I'm just saying, where do you think he's going to end up?
For what he does, I would say it's gotta be like a 70-30 split, rush passing to rushing, I think. Like, so like 180 to 80, so it's at 260. I think 275 is reasonable.
Okay.
Assuming Charles Williams can run the ball well. It depends on the offense, but like 175 to 100 or 200 to 75, I think that's very reasonable for a skill set. What do you think?
I mean, I think so, but it's still kind of a big if, at
Well,
least
yeah,
to
it's like,
me,
will he
about
do it?
whether
Yeah.
he's actually going to be able to throw the ball as accurately as he needs to get that.
Because here's the thing, too, really quick, their schedule. They go to Northwestern, good defense. To Wyoming, really good defense. To Fresno State, good defense. You know what I mean? They play some really good defenses on the road. And that's going to be an issue. So. That's what he should be, but like, yeah, I don't see why he can't combine for 275. I think that's a fair number, because that's only 50, what, 50 more yards than as a freshman.
So essentially what you're saying is, and I'm just going to put this in context for you.
Okay, what do I screw up on here? Go with it.
So last year, there were five different quarterbacks who averaged that many yards per game. Cole
Rushing and
McDonald,
passing, yeah.
Ty Ganji, Brett Rypien, Marcus Maximilian, and Jordan Love. So you're saying he's basically going to be a top five quarterback.
I put him number three in my list
Okay.
because the only quarterbacks I have above him at this time is Jordan Love, Cole McDonald, and even number four is Colin Hill. Even though I like Donald Hammond a third, I put him at three. But that's all the quarter. That's half your league, almost half your league, getting nearly 300 total yards per game on offense for a quarterback. That's not bad.
See, I think most of the reason I would feel inclined to take the under
Under 275.
under 275
Okay.
is because I would hope that the running game would be able to step up even despite the guys that they're losing this year. Because Lexington Thomas is gone, Evan Owens is gone, Xavier Campbell is gone. But that running game should still be really, really good.
Charles Williams is really good, I think. In the limited amount of carries, he did quite well. Outside of that, you got Tyreek Collins, excuse me, Tyleek Collins got the ball a few times. I don't know. It's gonna be the Cal transfer, Biagio, Ali Walsh. I don't know.
Well, what's interesting to me is that, at least compared to years past, where Lexington Thomas was really the bell cow. You know, he had a 215 carries last year, yeah. Right? It almost makes me wonder, you know, looking at the depth chart that the Rebels put out after the spring game and going into the fall, whether they might be trading a little bit of their explosiveness for a little more power. And I think that you get a little bit of that from the guys elsewhere on the depth chart. I'm talking specifically about guys like Tariq Collinsworth and Chad Maguire. Mm-hmm. Maguire, I believe, was listed as the backup to Williams, and both of those guys are bigger guys. You know, over 200 pounds. So, you know, and I feel like it's really cliche at this point to throw out kind of a thunder and lightning comp.
Yeah.
But if those guys can step up and bring a different element to running between the tackles, and I think that when you combine that with a very experienced offensive line that should continue to be pretty good at what it does. You know, between Rodgers and Williams last year, I just want to throw this out there because I think it's significant, and I think that there's room for optimism in reaching these. But Rodgers and Williams had a success rate that was combined around 48% last year. And that basically means that they were getting 50% of the yards they needed on first down, 70% on second, and 100% on either third and fourth. As a team last year, they were 76th nationally, 41.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So if those two guys can do better than what Thomas was able to do last year, and Thomas actually brought those numbers down a little bit. Now, he was only at 40% as far as success rate goes, and he was only at 40% on opportunity rate. Rodgers and Williams were right there at 57, 58%. And that's obviously going to be a very high bar to reach 2 years in a row. But if those two guys can, let's say, get to 50%, and if you know, Maguire and or Collinsworth or Walsh or whoever ends up filling out those kind of secondary roles in the same way that Campbell and Evans did last year. Let's not forget Campbell and Evans averaged 5 and 6.5 yards per carry respectively last year. They were both really good in small samples as well. So it's not necessarily that it's going to take one guy to have the same kind of year that Thomas had a couple of years ago. But if they can be the same kind of efficient with a little bit different look, you know, more of a balance of power and speed, the running game should still be able to lead the way, even if Rodgers is still a little bit erratic here and there as a passer.
Here's the thing. Okay, those are points I agree with 100% because the amount of carries Thomas had, you're not going to put a newbie. Williams will clearly get the most carries. But here's the thing about that. There's nothing more to add to the running game. You covered it completely, I believe. So you mentioned the passing game. This receiving group is going to be really good this year, I think. Like, Tyreek Collins came on late last year, really, really good receiver. Brandon Presley's back, Darren Woods Jr. They bring a guy from South Alabama, Jordan McCray. They bring in their four top receivers back and a transfer coming in. And so that area could be something where Rodgers, we may see him improve dramatically by having all these guys back on the receiving end. And hopefully,
if he can get them the ball,
that's what I mean. There's that too, obviously, getting the ball. But they clearly have talent and experiences and everything. But these guys are pretty good. Who they have, they're all upperclassmen except for one in Collins, and he seemed to be like their main guy late in the year, playing like that slot position where he's doing good things later on, and 13 yards per catch essentially. So I think you're right. If he can get in the ball, Rodgers. Speaking of, this could clearly help with that running game, which is going to be not new because Williams is there, but to build in as some depth back there, don't have to rely on Williams. They know what he's going to do when they go after him and try to get him and bring him down. So I think that's a big plus for this team, the receiving group. But again, Rodgers, pass the ball to him. Get the ball to whoever.
Now, see, I wish that I had gone back and listened to last year's UNLV podcast because I feel same like thing. The conversation around the receivers is almost exactly the same as it was last year. You know, long on potential, but short on actual production. All other than Collins, I think you're right. You know,
not so whose fault that, is production? Is it Rodgers being out, or just like whose fault is that this last year? Just new quarterback partway
through? I mean, I don't know that you can pin it on any one thing. I mean, I think it's worth noting that he had a catch rate of 67.4%, mm-hmm. and among the guys who are coming back this year, that's far and away the best. I think it's also worth noting that the other guys coming back. as far as returning starters like Darren Woods Jr. and Mekhi Stevenson, they were both well under 50%.
Collins
That's
is their best
change,
receiver.
First and foremost.
Yeah, Collins, I'm going to say he's going to be their best receiver and leading the team in most major categories.
Well, and you also mentioned McCray, but I think the other guy who could potentially play a huge role is Randall Grimes, who you may remember PJ Fleck was griping about the fact that he was set to go to Minnesota and ended up going to
right.
LV instead.
He's eligible right away, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Wasn't there somebody, was there a USC receiver eligible right away as well with Rebels? I forget.
Yeah, that's Grimes.
Oh.
Because McCray is coming from South Alabama.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was thinking about something else. Go ahead.
And I think that between the two of them, you could get an element that could help the Rebels maybe finish drives in a more balanced way, or at least give Rodgers some reliable red zone targets, if nothing else, because McCray's 6'5 and Grimes is 6'4. Those are two big bodies that I think that Rodgers can benefit from, because in his career, he's only completing 40% of his passes in the red zone. He has 8 touchdowns and I believe just 1 interception. So it's not like it's been, a total waste of effort down in the red zone. But I think that if those two guys can factor in just in that one way, this was an offense last year that was pretty good at finishing drives. I think they were 8th nationally as far as points per trip inside the 40. And those two guys might be a very big reason why they can stay up in that range.
Okay. I would say one thing with that, with those tall guys, don't throw the fade just because they're big.
Never throw the fade. That's
throw,
right.
What you do is throw to the corner end zone, but like a dart in that corner. So it's still essentially the same location, but it's up where only they can get it and not allowing a 5'8 DB who has hops to get up and tip the ball away.
Mm.
So I'm just saying, go to the back corner, go to the end zone, go to the sideline to get those guys to pass. Maybe throw it over the out of bounds marker where they have to reach and get it. Just don't throw the fade.
Well, that, and if the team is going to continue to rely on the run as much as they are, which I don't really see a reason why they wouldn't, having big bodies blocking on the outside can really only benefit, Williams and everybody else in that backfield.
Oh, definitely. So we're good on receivers. So what do we go? Let's go to the offensive line. What do they got there? Everybody back too, just about. Boom, look at that.
Just about, yeah.
Lose Nathan Jacobson, who was an honorable mention, 38 career starts. It's still a pretty big loss for a right tackle, but they bring back, 4 starters from last year, essentially, and a couple other guys who had a handful of starts. So I don't – like, here's
– I think it's actually 3 starters, because Jaron Caldwell did start 7 games last year. I think he's actually redshirting this year.
Oh, we should look into that. All right, we'll take a look and see. However, assuming he's gone, let's just say that, they still bring back a handful of starters and upperclassmen too, which is always a can't knock that really if you've been around for a while. So I think they'll be fine. And Roger, the number one goal? Let's keep Rodgers upright. Don't let him get hit. Right?
That's true.
That's what they should do. So keep those guys, keep him upright, keep the ball moving. I'm trying to do 2 things at once, if he redshirt or not, but. I'll get this later because I am not quite sure.
I think if I remember correctly, and I think it was Mark Anderson in the Las Vegas Review Journal, had said that Caldwell was going to take a red shirt because they're moving Justice Oluwaseun into the starting lineup.
Oh, here we go. April 10th probably will red shirt.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they said at media day, if that was mentioned, but if we assume if he's there, that's a boom. If he's not, it's not the end of the world. Yeah, he had toe surgery.
I'm going to throw out a relatively hot take.
Oh, what do you got?
For what this offense wants to do, if it can do it, this could be the best offensive line in the Mountain West.
Where's my blowtorch sound? They do return 16 of their 17 linemen from last year.
And this is not to say that they are the best unit in the Mountain West, but if they reach their ceiling with what they want to do on offense, this offensive line is absolutely going to be one of the biggest reasons why they do it. And it's not just about Justin Polo either, who's made a couple of different watch lists. He was the only guy on the offense to crack the official Mountain West preseason all-conference team.
Is there a top 50 somewhere? I think have we announced him being on there yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we have.
Okay, let's make it sure. It could be in the future, so that's somebody else maybe.
But, as you mentioned, they've got plenty of experience coming back. It's a deeper unit than we've seen in years past. So guys like Sid Acosta, who might not get a lot of headlines, but you know, he was, I believe, on the Remington Trophy watch list as one of the best centers in the country. They got Matt Brayton, who started half the season last year, and Oluwaseyin, who, if I remember correctly, Tony Sanchez said he might be the best offensive lineman that he's had to coach in his tenure at UNLV.
Is that saying much? I'm kidding. Half kidding.
I mean, and he's one of those guys that they brought in that is really part of the revamp recruiting efforts that so Sanchez has had over the past few years too. All five of the guys who are set to be a part of this line are over 300 pounds.
So I was getting to. Basically, everybody's 300 pounds except for the centers.
Yeah. Well, so, even Acosta, I believe, is listed at 300 pounds,
yeah.
Is he not?
Yes. Oh, no, sorry. Look at the left guard. Sorry, yeah, 6'1", 300. Look at these guys. 6'3", 310. 6'2", 325. 6'2", 320. 6'5", 305. 6'4", 325. They got some big guys. 6'2", 315. So that's when the freshman is probably not going to play that much this year, but they have size and depth in. That's what we need. Like, we look at Utah State. I still think they're going to be pretty good. They replaced their whole offensive line, and Jordan Love, I think, can make up for that early on. But there's a thing to be said to have guys back, inexperienced guys, and some decent guys, too, like honorable mention guy with Justin Polo and whoever else will step up, and the starting guys from last year to keep playing. That's why Utah State may struggle early on with a brand-new offensive line of five new starters.
Yeah, and I think right now they have a pair of sophomores, UNLV does, mm-hmm. stepping into both tackle spots. You know, they have Oluwaseyin, I believe, is at left tackle.
Yes.
Or maybe he's at right tackle.
He's one of the tackles.
And then they have Ashton Morgan at the other tackle position. Mm-hmm. But if most of what you're asking them to do is to line up and hit the guy in front of them, I don't think that that's going to be much of a big deal.
No, they'll be fine. And so, like, looking overall at the offense, it's pretty well established. Like, there's not too many holes to poke at to say, hey, they're going to be good or not good here. I still think the biggest question mark and concern is just, are Rodgers being healthy for the most part? Running game is probably my second concern, because to find depth since Lexington Thomas is gone. But if they keep Rodgers healthy, like, we've seen his offense be pretty dynamic in some of these games. Like, remember the, was it 69-66 overtime loss to Wyoming? Mm-hmm. That was like 50-something points in regulation, I believe, or maybe 60 points in regulation. And that's a really good defense a couple years ago. So we've seen spurts what this Rodgers and offense can do.
Well, so, here's one more note.
Ooh, what do you got?
As far as projected S&P Plus, UNLV is projected to be the best offense in the Mountain West.
Ooh, boy.
Better than Utah State.
Okay.
Better than Boise.
Yeah, not too surprising. Well, sorry.
They were the only team projected as far as offensive S&P Plus in the top 40.
Is that over at Football Outsiders?
That was part of Bill Connolly's stat profiles as well.
I must not have seen that part. I apologize. So they're projected to be better than Hawaii.
Better than Hawaii.
Oh, wow. That's some high praise there.
But.
Guess.
And sadly, this is a bad but.
Oh. Defense is what the defense remains
severely problematic. Not, I mean, you're closer than you think you are.
130.
They were 117th last year, and they were 121st, or they're projected to be 121st this year.
So let's just get to the defense now. Here's a big issue: they lose their three best starting defense linemen from last year. They lose Bailey, the Logie linebacker, pretty good, and their Dalton Baker and Jacquez Khalili in the secondary. So, but the big front, defensive line, oh, let's just run the ball and get troubles. We've done it last year. They have new starters. Yeah, we'll just run over them again, essentially, right?
I mean, what really killed the Rebels last year was they got murdered by big plays. And it's not like they were on a UConn bad level.
Oh, boy.
But they were, I phrased it as uncomfortably close in my notes. And I'm just going to put this into context for you. Last year, they gave up 84 plays of over 20 yards. They gave up 40 plays of over 30 yards. And, you know, even to stretch it out, they gave up 7 plays of over 60 yards last year. All of those were among the worst figures in the country.
Sounds about right.
Way deep in the triple digits. And this was just something that, you know, Bill Connolly had mentioned specifically in his preview that I thought was worth noting. It was especially bad in instances where the defense would have been in more favorable situations, on 3rd and 4 or more situations last year. UNLV opponents completed 54% of their passes, 15 and a half yards per completion.
On third and four?
And a quarter of those, third and four or more. So that includes like even obvious passing situations, which, by the way, they were 126th on passing downs, S&P plus on defense last year. A quarter of those opportunities went for more than 25 yards.
That's not good. Just putting it out there. That's not good.
And it's not to say that there weren't anything, there wasn't anything that the defense didn't do well last year, but maybe if we start up front, like you mentioned, they're replacing, you know, several key starters in that defensive line rotation. Mm-hmm. Last year, they were actually middle of the pack as far as defensive opportunity rate allowed and defensive stuff rate. They were 61st and 66th respectively. But, you know, moving Gabe McCoy to defensive end is really only going to help so much. They're going to need some of these guys who are coming back from injury. You know, in the case of someone like Nick Dadashian, he's going to have to try and get back to his 2017 form when he had 6.5 tackles per loss. It may not sound like much, but that's the kind of production that they're having to replace from guys that are leaving, like, you know, Salanuala Willie and Roger Mann and things like that. Those were guys that were maybe a little more disruptive up front than you would have expected.
Yeah, they had 21 TFLs combined, so that's not too bad.
And, you know, they've got guys to replace in the interior, like Kolo Uwasike. He's going to get more playing time than he did last year. He's a big sophomore, but, you know, he's going to be counted upon to take a larger role. And next to him, someone like Tavis Malekias, he's going to be taking on a bigger role. So it's not necessarily that they need, you know, someone to step up and break out in the same way that Gabe McCoy did last year. But when you go down the line of the kinds of TFLs that they're having to replace from the guys up front, you know, Bailey Lalagi, for instance, graduated. He had 5.5 tackles for loss. Dalton Baker, out of the secondary, had 3 tackles for loss. Willie and Mann had 7 tackles for loss each. And so did Jameer Outzie on the defensive line. That's not nothing.
No. Especially when the defense is not great and you're losing your best players. There needs to be somebody to come up and do something. Could it be a case of we may not know who it is at this point, but that's a lot of percentage production lost for this team. Even though it wasn't great, it's still not good to lose your best players.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what to say of this team. The defense, obviously, here's the thing too. You mentioned all those big plays, third and four long passing plays, the plus 30, plus 40 yard big plays they gave up. If they can limit that down like 15%, which isn't a lot, that would go a long way to make it that much better. Because instead of having, say, what'd you say? How many 30-plus yard plays did they give up last year? Do you have that again?
40.
Which is 40. Cut that to 30. That could be, who knows what that could turn into, right?
Yeah.
Cut it down by just a couple. Like any play 30 or more, 10 of those gone, that's a big deal. How many of those are touchdowns? A 30-plus yard play? Probably, well, that gets you in field goal range at minimum. Point extended drives getting you to your side of the field at a bare minimum. And so cut those down a little bit. You're in business even if you don't have TFLs or sacks to go along with it, if you just knock a ball down or get in a guy's face or make a better tackle or don't get blown coverage. And so that's, I think, if they can limit those, that could really offset guys who are losing the 21 TFLs from the defensive line who are gone. That could go a long way without getting those same numbers, but being productive in another way.
Well, and to go back to the point I was making about the fact that there were some things that this defense was able to do last year, you know, they were also middle of the pack as far as opponents' completion rate and sack rate. And I think both of those not only have to do with the defensive line, they have to do with the linebackers as well. But the linebacker situation is like there's just enough questions to make me wonder how good they're going to be. Well, and not necessarily that they're going to be bad. But just that there's a broad range of possibilities as far as I see it. Because Javon White is pretty good.
Yeah.
He was one of those guys, and I think that this was a question that we neglected to get to all fully in our Media Days recap about the most underrated players in the conference. Javon White was number one on my list with a bullet.
Let's see, 6.5 sacks. Six FTFLs, 2 sacks, 4 interceptions, 4 pass breakups, 4 forced fumbles, and have a grade of 32.5%. Pretty good.
So even though they're moving McCoy to defensive end, they've got him back at linebacker. He's got at least one spot locked down.
Mm-hmm.
It's the other two spots that kind of make me wonder, how good they're going to be, because they're plugging in, at least for right now, a redshirt freshman in Malachi Salu. You know, another one of those highly regarded three-star recruits that he's brought in, but still a redshirt freshman. And then a middle linebacker, to me, is maybe the biggest question of all, because you've got two guys to choose from in either Farrell Hester and Vic Ferramontes. I thought that Hester would play a bigger role than he did last year. And, you know, he did rack up 3.5 tackles for loss.
Played in every game.
And a couple pass breakups, but didn't have quite the impact that I thought he would. And now he's competing at that middle linebacker spot with a guy in Ferramontes who, you know, went to JUCO college and performed pretty well there. Came in as a high 3-star guy, you know, pretty close to being a 4-star recruit, if I remember correctly.
Well, maybe that's a good thing. Get that competition.
Exactly. So if one of those two guys can break out and be the kind of impact player that I think UNLV really needs in the middle of the defense, that could pay huge dividends. But to me, it's kind of a big if as to which one of those guys it's going to be, or even if it's going to happen at all.
All right, so let's go to the secondary really quick. So we mentioned a couple of guys that are gone. All those plays, I'm assuming, I'm sure you cannot break it down by pass or run, but I'm assuming those 30-plus plays were passing plays.
Probably. Actually, if you want to vamp for a minute, I can tell you exactly how many.
Okay, yeah. I'm curious to know, because the secondary losing two guys. Let's kind of recap who's coming back. You have Evan Osturo, safety. Jericho Flowers, who is in our top 50 somewhere. I forget where exactly. I think he made a list, but he is back, and he did a lot of pass breakups, him and a few others, but replacing two guys, I'm going to take a stab here, I bet half or 60% are passing plays on those. But interesting, they lose two starters on a secondary that wasn't really great. I guess I'll give a good thing, Matt, here. All these guys who are probably projected to start or play a lot are all upperclassmen, so I'll be positive for you, Rebel fans. You got some guys who've been around, can know how to work hard on bad teams, and hope you play well soon.
The answer, by the way, is 25 out of 40.
Interesting. More balanced than I thought.
As far as 30-yard plays allowed, 25 of them were through the air.
So the running and pass defense is not good at big plays. Good to know.
All seven of those 60-yard pass play, those were through the air as well.
That makes a lot of sense.
And that's where I kind of take the opposite tack, where it's like, yeah, they've got a veteran secondary coming back, but
ooh, not good.
They weren't necessarily very good last year. And you mentioned injuries right at the onset, and maybe more so than any other unit on the defense, this was the unit that was impacted the most. You know, Jericho Flowers missed a couple games last year. Alex Perry, who, you know, he had a lot of hype, you know, coming in as a transfer, I believe it's from Ohio State, if I'm not mistaken. But he missed most of the year with, you know, a couple different injuries. I think it was a concussion and then something else. So he didn't really see as much playing time. Evan Ostry missed a couple games. And Greg Francis, who got pressed in as a JUCO transfer last year, you know, he missed some time as well. All those guys are back, which is, you know, always positive. But, you know, again, you know, this is another situation where they're asking veteran guys to step up and take another step forward. But they're also counting on some new guys playing huge roles as too. You know, we haven't mentioned guys like Drew Tejman, for instance, who this time last year was a wide receiver.
Is he having enough spring practice and fall camp to be a guy to get into that rotation?
He is number one on the depth chart right now at free safety.
There you go. That's a big fat yes.
or a guy like Miles Plummer, who is, you know, didn't really see that much playing time last year. You know, he did play in 9 games, but he didn't, you know, start any games that I can remember. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to be counted on to take a bigger role as well. And most of the guys behind them are either freshmen or sophomores, guys like Philip Hill, Bryce Jackson, or whatever. So,
what's your confidence level 1 to 10 on this team?
Oh, man. 4?
Oh! Okay, that's not good. 4.
I mean, you want to say that there's nowhere to go but up, but this is the same kind of thing that they've been wrestling with for a few years now.
So, with this secondary here, we like the offense overall. Defense, we're not huge fans of, because it's not shocking defense is projected to be that bad and has been that bad, because history plays part of it. There's a reason where I'm confident in Rodgers playing well, or Tylee Collins playing well, Brandon Presley, wide receiver guys playing well. Defense has never shown much, outside of a few players here or there, to be really good. So there's a good standing to say your confidence level in that secondary is a 4 out of 10. Defense might be one of the worst in the country, which means if things line up as we think they will, pretty above average offense, maybe top 3 offense, bottom 2, 3 defense, there might be a lot of like 40 to 30 games for the Rebels.
I mean, let's put it this way. It's not the most accurate measure, but just by opponent's passer rating, UNLV has dropped every single year since 2015.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, and I think we forgot to mention another linebacker who could play a role too. I forgot to mention Rashad Jackson, who's coming in from Florida as a graduate transfer.
Oh, that's right. He
could be in that mix as well.
So maybe he'll come and make a play, get some solid reps early on, become a starter. But I'm with you. Defense, like overall defense, I'm like a 3. Sorry.
I feel
and two
better.
Of those points are for Gabe McCoy.
I mean, I feel better about their chances to defend the run, but they absolutely need to get better against defending the pass. And yeah, with so many kind of newish pieces having to come together, it just strikes me as a little bit dicey as to whether it's actually going to happen or not.
Sure. All right, let's go to special teams. You know, it also doesn't help, a brand new place kicker.
Brand new everything, pretty much.
Yeah,
right?
So I said, yeah, brand new kickoff guy. No, they got a punter back. He's there.
I mean, Hasekin is fine. He's fine, I guess.
I'm bullish on their return game, punt kick return, if it's Tylee Collins or Brandon Presley.
Brandon Presley's out for the year, though.
Oh, shoot. He is. Oh, what did I mention before? What is he out
for? Torn ACL.
Oh, shoot. I apologize if I mentioned him once or twice, which I know he did momentarily ago. Sorry. Okay. Well, even with Tylee Collins, he had a handful of returns, did okay. I would like to see him back there as well, because I think he can move the ball well. But they lose Evan Owens, who did okay. You know what I mean? Did all right. But just here's what I want to say. Special teams, return. Just don't fumble the ball. Just keep it in play. That goes for any team, not just the Rebels and me making fun of them or saying basic football things.
I mean, that's another instance where if you really want to look at it, it's especially by SP Plus, it really can't get much worse than it did last year. Just as a whole, they were 128th. Yeah. On special teams, S&P Plus, they were 126 in field goal efficiency and 129 and 126 in punt and kick return efficiency.
What does field goal efficiency go for? Because they only kicked 8 or 10 field goals. Is that why?
I wish I knew.
Or 11, excuse me, because they were, they made 6 of 11 field goals. Whatever. Whatever. Just don't screw up. Make the field goals you should make. Don't fumble the ball. Don't muff the punts. And maybe get a good 15 to 25 kick and punt return average.
Well, and if you don't trust your field goal unit, maybe just get more aggressive on fourth down or something like that.
Hey, no punt Sanchez. Can we get that started?
I mean, they were already third in third down attempts fourth down attempts in the Mountain West last year, but maybe they just need to bump that up a little bit.
Okay. I see. All right, let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back, talk schedules. All right, here we go, Matt. We have the UNLV. They're not the Runner Rebels in football. Is there a – can we call – well, actually, they should be called the Runner Rebels with Rodgers and Williams, right?
I kind of informally call them the Runner Rebels just because they run the football.
Sure. Is Hey Reb a thing as well? I see that sometimes.
That's true, yeah.
Okay, I was making sure, like, Hey Reb. I see the hashtag Hey Reb. I'm never sure if it's just a hoops thing or whatever, but I guess it's also nice – we should say this. It's officially the new/old/retired mascot is gone for officially. Remember the one was last spring they made that the new mascot they got rid of the drawing, the rendering?
Yeah, and then you don't see that drawing anymore.
I think it's officially gone. Was it really that bad?
I mean, I guess it was okay, but it definitely looked like the kind of thing that was workshopped among a committee for like $50,000 or $60,000.
Yeah, can they pay us that much? And we'll
like just give us the big head with the ginormous mustache.
That's all we want.
Let's just call it a day.
Yeah,
you really can't improve upon that. But anyway,
I will go to Canva.com and make something for much less. You can still pay me the same amount of money.
There you go.
All right, they opened up against Southern Utah, which is a quick 90-minute drive for the Thunderbirds to come south to Rebel Stadium. Which I did mention last one of the prior shows. I drove through Vegas. That stadium is like literally on your back in the freeway. It'll block the sun once it's built on I-15.
Oh yeah,
it's huge. So they'll be at Sam Boyd for one more year. Probably should mention that they go to or host Southern Utah. They should win. Then they host a Sun Belt team, a decent Sun Belt team in Arkansas State, where at home they're barely given a 33% chance to win that game.
I remember how weird that game was last year, though.
Was it a rainy game? Was that that game?
It was in a driving rainstorm.
Oh, boy. Those are the best games, though, right? Those type of games, sometimes.
And UNLV was actually pretty close to winning that game. If I remember correctly, they led at halftime and then just kind of let it slip away, mostly because they lost the turnover battle.
Yeah, 27-20 they lost.
Yeah.
So, and that was a road game. So they get them at home. That's good. But Arkansas State, where do you know? I thought I had in front of me. Do you know where they're projected in the Sun Belt?
Phil Steele at least has them projected to win the Sun Belt West Division.
All right, then. Here's a good and bad thing. They play SMU Week 1, who should be a decent team, at home. They go to UNLV. So at least the Rebels get a war tune-up game for Southern Utah, which I didn't ask you, but it's a win, right? Southern Utah?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure with that 128 S&P plus rated defense, we got to ask every time, don't we?
Yeah.
They exactly. Here's the big thing for them. They bring back Justice Hansen at quarterback.
I thought he graduated.
Oh, wait. Am I looking at 2018? Oh. Hold on. Let me refresh my browser here. I was looking at last year's box score. And I click on roster to see because I wanted to look up some guys. Is he back or is he not back? Let's refer. Oh, man.
No, he graduated. If I remember correctly, geez. The presumed starter, at least for right now, is Logan Bonner.
There we go. Who had 32 pass attempts last year. 32. That's it. That's ridiculous. So
didn't really need to see the field that much because Justin Hansen was pretty good.
I apologize for not looking up there. He was really good. So new quarterback. If they're projected to win the West, can we just say it's a loss for UNLV and move on? Or do we really need to talk about more of this team?
I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit closer than S&P Plus might suggest, mostly because they're losing enough key pieces on offense to make me think that UNLV should have a chance in this game. Not only are they losing Hansen, they're losing two of their top three rushers from last year, too. You know, Hansen not only was their leading quarterback, but he also ran for over 500 yards after you adjust for sacks. Between him and Warren Wan, they're losing about 1,300 yards on the ground that they're going to have to make up somehow.
So that big play capability Rebels have been known for to give up may not be there this game.
Yeah, and they're also losing three of their top six pass catchers as well. So while they're bringing back a lot on defense, you know, the running game was pretty effective for most of the game last year. And so I'm just going to say it. I have this one as a UNLV win.
I'm leaning towards you after he's seen a bit more of that. So I'm trying to see their odds out for the. Usually Vegas has odds for like every UNLV and Nevada game. Are there a point spread on this one yet?
I had not seen one.
Okay. No. I'm not going to take time to look at it, but you might be convincing me because I is going to pencil this in for loss, but it's at home. They get the. Now, I'll be positive. Not the. Never not positive, but Wyoming. Or, oh, geez, I put a W down. Jeez. We need to hurry up here. I'm getting crazy. UNLV with the victory.
Okay.
Winning over Arkansas State. They go to Northwestern, which is a bit tougher competition. I remember watching the Holiday Bowl at Utah Northwestern. Oh, boy, that was just dreadful. He's got no points in that game. But what I do know, Northwestern has a decent defense.
That's true.
So with the defense going up against this will be their big test because Arkansas State will be okay, right? But Northwestern will be one of the first big tests to see where the Rebels are at this year.
I mean, maybe they're not going to win the division again this year, but Northwestern should still be pretty tough.
You think so?
I mean, I think so. Because I mean, you mentioned the defense, and they have maybe one of the more underrated linebacker units in the Big Ten. Yeah, they got Patty Fisher, who might be an all-conference performer, and next to him they got Blake Gallagher and Chris Bergen. That's a trio, at least with a lot of experience. And even though they're replacing Clayton Thorson at quarterback on offense, they're bringing in Hunter Johnson from Clemson.
Yeah, there you go. I'll just say whatever because I saw this offense last year and was not much.
I mean, it's not going to be like an offense that'll blow you away, but this seems like the kind of game where UNLV might have trouble moving the football.
I think so as well. And this is going to be like, you're playing a Big Ten team. They're going on the road. It's their first big road game of the year. I don't trust Rebels on the road, so I'm like, I'm going to say they're losing this one.
Yeah, so do I.
What does S&P Plus say the percentages again? My page is not
looking. They have Northwestern 79% to win this game.
I see that 14-point touchdown spread. It might be a little bit closer than that, but I'd say If Rebels can keep it within 10, single digits, that'll be a good win, a good game for them.
Yeah.
And we've already talked about Wyoming. They have a conference game. They go to Wyoming, correct? Yeah, they go on the road September 28th. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at my last podcast notes, so I know where to correctly slot this game. It is going to be a loss for UNLV because the defense of Wyoming is really good. I mean, really, really good.
Assuming yeah, it's not going to be 69-66 again. I can tell you that.
If it was, it'd be awesome. What's your take on the same thing? I think you had a win last time for the Cowboys.
Yes.
Same issues for me. Same reasoning.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, go back and listen to Wyoming podcast. We talk about the teams more in depth. Logan Wilson, you know the guys who are out there, right? He's a playmaker and our first team linebacker, inside linebacker, I should say. Key inside linebacker. Boise State at home, not a chance, right?
Yeah, no.
But the defense for Boise is really good. They're going to shut down Rodgers and anything they throw their way on offense for the most part. They might get up some points here and there. Rodgers can have his legs running around. But I don't see this being very close because even if Boise's offense isn't as good as it normally is, maybe by week 5 or 6 it is, but defense, like I said, is going to smother everybody they play. So that'll make up for anything.
That and they've lost 5 in a row to Boise, and their 7 losses overall are by 23 points on average.
All right. So what do we say about Vanderbilt on the road? They're the cellar dwellers of the SEC, so there's that.
I mean, we talk about Vanderbilt as being maybe like the dregs of the SEC, and that might be true, but they still won 6 games last year.
Well,
they still might be a fair, you know, bet to go back to a bowl again. And we had the same conversation last year about Nevada, and then they went out and dropped 41 points on Nevada. Obviously, this year's team isn't going to be quite the same. But especially on offense, this is the kind of team that could pose a lot of problems for UNLV. They are replacing Kyle Shermer, but they're replacing him with a grad transfer in Riley Neal from Ball State, who was pretty good when he was healthy there for the Cardinals. You know, they still have a guy in Keshawn Vaughn, who was one of the more explosive quarterbacks anywhere you'll find in college football last year. They still have one of the better tight ends in the country in Jared Pinkney. And that's not even getting into the fact that they're bringing back like what 3, 4, 5 of their no they're bringing back 4. Sorry, I'm trying to do the math in my head. 7 of their top 8 pass catchers from last year.
It's pretty good.
I don't know that UNLV is going to be able to stop this team on offense. No. And this was an offense, by the way. Yeah, we like to joke about Vanderbilt. They were a top 25 offense by SP Plus last year.
Yeah.
It just strikes me as the kind of situation where UNLV is going to get into a shootout, and I just don't think they're going to be able to keep up. So I have this one as a Vanderbilt win.
Me too, really quick, because they have running back Keshawn Vaughn, second team preseason All-SEC, Kalijah Lipscomb, second team all-wide receiver, tight end Jared Pinkney, second team preseason All-SEC. And so they have plenty of offensive players out there to test this defense to the extreme. And so I don't see much defense on this SEC for Vanderbilt preseason-wise, so maybe that could be opportunity for Armani Rodgers to maybe he'll score some points, possibly, but I don't think they can keep up. And even though SEC, like Vanderbilt, has finished last, they're finished like dead last in their division. 6, just so you know, 6 of the 7 teams in the East got a first-place vote to win the conference, or win the division. And Vanderbilt,
man. Yeah, they're still getting that SEC money, so it's hard to feel too bad for them, but man.
Because I'm curious about the voting really quick. 233 for Georgia, makes sense. 4-21, okay. Missouri 3, shrug, okay. South Carolina 1 vote, Tennessee a vote, Kentucky a vote.
Who voted for Tennessee, man?
They're fifth, man. They weren't last.
Whatever.
Let me ask you this real quick. Other side of the division, who would put Mississippi State 1?
somebody who wanted attention.
No kidding. Also, real quick, LSU got 5 first place votes, and Alabama got 253. So, all right, so that's obviously a loss for me as well.
Then they go to Fresno State.
Which, are you surprised by this? S&P Plus has the same win probability for each of these games.
No, I'm not.
I thought it'd be less for Fresno State.
Because I think just Fresno because State, of the lack of returning production, you mean?
Well, and because Fresno State's better than Vanderbilt, in my opinion.
I think if you put those two teams together, it would be a really fascinating game.
It would be, but Fresno State is not going to lose this one. Was it? I know I probably asked this before. Was it 2 years ago the rain-soaked game where UNLV got one of their few wins?
I believe that was 3 years ago.
Okay, 3 years ago. So that's too far to talk about now.
But... I think that was when the water main broke, if I'm not mistaken, at Sam Boyd.
And that's why it rained in Vegas.
Yeah, something like that.
But this game, like, we talked about Fresno a bunch, but here's what it comes down to for me. Like, we mentioned how that – here's where the secondary of UNLV not being great, we don't think could be in handy, because new QB for Fresno, new receivers for Fresno. They do bring back Gordon in the game. Defense will be fine, but – this would be a test for Rodgers. I think a test for him to actually play well. But, like, for them to beat Fresno, it would have to be the quarterback play never develops in anything. They don't find a good go-to receiver. And the offense is that bad. Because the defense is good enough to win some games for Fresno if the offense struggles. And so that's, like, the only way I can see is it'd have to include also the defense having, like, an off night against the UNLV for the Rebel Swim. But I don't see them winning this one.
I mean, I feel like you kind of have to toss out last year's result to some extent, because mm-hmm. – that was just a disaster for UNLV.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those games where it was during that stretch where they were still transitioning to life without Armani Rodgers.
Yeah.
And let's not forget, they won this game 2 years ago.
They did.
Against a relative, what I would consider to be a relatively flat Bulldogs team. But I don't see that really happening again.
Yeah, looking at my schedule,
I think it'll be closer to than 48-3, but I don't see them winning this game.
No, it might be a game where it's like I could see the final score like 20-3 or like 30-17, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Comfortable, they get some points. They host San Diego State, which we've already talked about before. It's a loss for me as well, as you see the trend continuing. Those L's are racking up as we go from week to week.
Same.
Like, if there's a way they can win, it's because Ryan Agnew's – it's the same thing kind of for Fresno, except I assume Fresno's offense will be better. Passing the ball, okay. Who's going to catch the ball for San Diego State? It's going to be the Juwan Washington show. If they can slow him down, they'll be in the mix. And it'll be a good test. Again, it's repeating myself. These two teams are fairly similar, Fresno and San Diego State. I just think Fresno's offense is a touch better overall. And so I just don't see a Rodgers be able to do enough to get the win. However – to flip the other side, look at how Aztecs ended last year. They lost to Hawaii. Didn't they lose to UNLV last year as well?
They did.
And so there's that to think about. So I'd still be pretty confident Aztecs can win this game. But, I just go to Aztecs win. I don't think UNLV has enough to do it. Then they go to CSU, which we already talked about before. I had a victory for the Rams, which now think about it. Oh, I'm not sure. We'll see about that. But, any reason the Rams could get or UNLV could beat the Rams? I think it's very possible. This is going to be a close game, in my opinion.
Probably. I mean, I think this is another situation like we just talked about with the Vanderbilt game, where it's going to come down to who scores last.
Because
mm-hmm. I don't really see either of these offenses being able to stop the other, either of these defenses being able to stop the other. But I think that this is maybe a good juncture to talk about one thing that. If UNLV is going to hit the benchmark that we talked about way at the beginning of this podcast and get to a bowl game, one thing that's going to have to go differently is winning on the road.
Yeah.
And it's not that there's going to be that many opportunities to do so, I don't think. But one of the things that really got them to the doorstep a couple of years ago when they went 5-7 was that they were also 3-3 on the road. And so I think if they can beat Colorado State, which again, I don't see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the kinds of games that they're going to have to win to claw their way to 6 victories.
Here's the thing. They could beat Colorado State.
They could.
I think it's even very likely they could beat Colorado State. The reason I'm picking them, no. You see the schedule leading up to this game? At Wyoming, Boise State, whatever you want to say at Vanderbilt, it's on the road across the country. At least they have SEC talent at some level. So, but their offense is good. At Fresno, San Diego State. That's a brutal schedule within the context of the Mountain West. And they go on the road to CSU, who Colin Hill is a pretty good quarterback. And if those guys can get things going, that's part of the reason I'm picking the loss, not necessarily based on the head-to-head in the vacuum, but leading into the game of the toughness of the Rebels' opponents.
Yeah.
And then they host Hawaii, which, how are they a slight favorite at home versus Hawaii? The Golden Pineapple Trophy is on the line in this game. Is that why? A little extra motivation at home?
I mean, we'll talk about this more when we get to the Warriors podcast. I see more similarities between this team than you might suspect.
Go on.
Basically, offenses and defenses. Offenses that can move the ball and defenses that might have trouble stopping others from moving the football.
Okay. So you give your prediction first this time.
I've got this one as a UNLV win.
What?
I do.
Really?
I'm just gonna say, I mean, this is a tease for our Hawaii preview. Hawaii was really hard for me to figure out.
Yeah. Have we, really quick, I know we're gonna get to, I just thought of this just now. What's the team that Matt picked to do battle be really good this year?
Oh.
We'll save that for our big time preview, the kind of the mega preview we do, where we kind of after we go through fall and all the spring, we need to bring that up because there's always a team where Matt predicts like a three win team and they go off to go like 9-3 or something or 10 wins or win the conference.
You're welcome in advance, by the way.
Yeah, whoever the team that is, I'm the opposite. I think it's Hawaii and it's not even close.
Okay.
Because again, we'll talk next time in Hawaii, either the next podcast or one after. But remember, if Cole McDonald doesn't have a bloody scrotum, he'll be pretty good again this year.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's gonna be close. That secondary, which we talked about, which we're not confident in, dude, Cedric Bird, JoJo Ward, whew, no way, man.
Okay.
Then San Jose State at home, the nice victory they get for like after 3 months, they're gonna win versus San Jose State. I believe you had that as well for the Rebels.
No, I have that one as a San Jose State win.
Oh, wait, you do? I forgot. Oh, I have mine down that year. So you have final game at Nevada for the. It's not on Nevada Day because that's Halloween, right? Isn't that when Nevada Day is or something? Or October 30th?
I don't know that off the top of my
We got the
head.
Fremont Canyon on the line.
Yeah.
And for me, I got Nevada with the victory because whoever the quarterback is will be fine for Nevada. It'll be close, I think. It is on the road, which plays kind of a big part for me as well. But Tawatua, best player in the field, give the win to the best player. Best team, I should say. Sorry. Best player on the team will get the victory, and that's Nevada. Better than Armani Rogers, I'll say it.
These games have tended to be a lot closer than you would expect. I think it was like, what, three of the last four have been within 8 points or fewer?
Even so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and this, for whatever reason, just seems to be like one of the harder games to predict because you never know what's going to happen.
I mean, at this point, we don't know quarterback for Nevada as well. Malik Henry, is it somebody else? That's part of it too. But regardless, it'll be competitive, I
But
think.
if you listen to our Wolfpack podcast, you already know I have that as a Nevada win.
Oh yeah, Wolfpack podcast. If you're wondering really quick, because this is a Nevada show, I have Wolfpack 7-5.
All right.
What did you have, Matt, real quick?
I had him at 8-4.
Okay, so all right, so that puts me Nevada, or excuse me, UNLV 3-9.
Same.
Oh jeez, is
We're
this
1-7 in conference.
me too? Me beating San, me have them winning over San Jose State, and you have them winning over the Warriors of Hawaii.
Yes.
So does this mean Coach Sanchez is getting the pink slip?
If Reed Francois is true to her word, I guess so.
Oh man, is there a way, because we both have 3-9, that they can get to a bowl game? Like if we're gonna say they can get to six victories, who would your other three victories be, Matt?
I'll give you four teams that I think could be in that mix. Five, actually.
Oh, five. There you go.
And this is like if things come together and the defense can be adequate.
Adequate.
They can beat Wyoming.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
They can beat San Diego State. They can beat Colorado State. They can beat San Jose State, and they can beat Nevada.
Okay, here's what I have here. So that's, so you're saying if everything goes perfect, they might go 8-4.
If things break their way, yeah.
I would have, I'm kind of in the same mix as you. I'd have I honestly, I'm maybe Northwestern, but not really. But here's the thing too, Arkansas State's a toss-up for me. I would lean toward CSU definitely, Nevada definitely. I only have four teams here because I already had the Spartans game. I think not definitely, but teams I could see them getting a win versus Wyoming. I think that's my lowest of this mix. I'm kind of stretching to include them. San Diego State, just because what happened last year, it's at home, and I think Rogers is fairly exciting. He's healthy at CSU and at Nevada. And again, maybe Northwestern, but I'm not putting any hedge into that. So, but even saying that, that includes them winning two more road games, three more road games for me. I have them winning no road games this year, I believe. Am I correct on
That's
that?
a tall
Yeah.
task, yeah.
So, yeah, 3-9. I mentioned Bob Davies, my go-to coach to be fired, but whew. Sanchez year five has fewer wins. This would tie his worst season ever, right? 3-9, I believe.
Yes,
I
it
don't think he
would.
had a 2-win season, so. Oh, man. Are we really saying 3-9? Is that what we got here? We locked into this?
I mean, you are more than welcome to change your predictions anytime you want. I do not.
I'm not. Even in our big preview?
No.
Okay.
Not unless there's a really compelling excuse.
Injury of some sort of magnitude once fall camp gets underway.
Yeah.
All right, so, yeah, I go 3-9, you go 3-9. Tony Sanchez on his way out. Can UNLV ever be anything better than this? I know it's a big question, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, we've seen pretty much every other team in the conference pop up at some point.
Yeah, because we've seen...
In recent memory.
Yeah, we've had San Jose State with David Fell. Sorry to bring it up again. Utah State, Air Force, and even New Mexico has won a share of the division title.
Well, and here's the thing. You know, it's not like they aren't putting forth the effort to make the program not as visible and successful as it can be. You know, we haven't really even mentioned, you know, the big Furman, the Fertitta football complex that they're pouring like millions upon millions of dollars into. That's going to be opening soon. That's going to be a big draw for a lot of student athletes. And, you know, whether you want to make jokes about half filling the new Raider Stadium or not, you know, that's going to be a draw for a lot of student athletes too, is playing in a brand new modern state-of-the-art facility like that. And oh, by the way, we didn't really talk about recruiting because it's a little hard to rope that into the conversation here, but they've already signed, I think, 6 or 7 three-star recruits for the 2020 recruiting class. So it's not like they aren't putting in the work.
So what is it's it? Just, that means it's coaching, right? That next step, if they have the facilities that are being built. I know they're not there yet, so that's hard to say, oh, you should have these guys. Maybe it's 2 years away when they're actually using those facilities. If the facilities are there, if they just got re-upped for Nike again for $2 million a year of gear just the other day, I believe, which is shocking because CSU gets more than them, which is weird, but whatever. I digress. They have talent. You mentioned recruiting. They have talent currently. They've had good running backs. They have a good Charles Williams is there, Armani Rogers, Tyvek Collins is a good talent, Gabe McCoy defense. They're getting a few good players. The last step is coaching, right? Is that the thing that's just been lacking?
I don't know. Because, I mean, was last year bad coaching or was it just bad luck losing Armani Rogers for as long as they did?
I'd say bad luck. And then, honestly, Lexington Thomas quit for a bit on the team, I would say.
And just looking at this year, you know, they get Boise, Fresno, and San Diego. You know, is that bad luck? Just luck of the draw? The fact that the schedule flipped the way that it has?
Well, no, they'd have San Diego and Fresno regardless. It's just Boise.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, they're drawing maybe a tougher schedule than they would have, you know, a year or two ago. But that goes back to the original question that I posed. Was last year their best chance?
I'd still say the year before. Because year before, we saw tangible evidence where they should have won a sixth game. Last year with injuries, it's hard to predict. I still would have gone to a bowl game last year, but thing. Sorry. What was that?
I was just gonna say I don't think it's one thing. I think it's just a combination of things that have worked against them in the last couple of years. And at least, as you know, if our forecast plays out the way that we expect it to, I would kind of see it the same way.
Okay, so it's just weird. Has every team had a 10-win season in the Mountain West except UNLV? Has CSU had 10 wins? Nevada and CSU are probably the only two. No, CSU, because when they played Utah in the Vegas Bowl that 1 year with Rashard Higgins.
Well, San Jose State had its 10-win season before it entered the conference.
When they played Fresno?
And so did
that Hawaii. Was WAC?
It was the last year of the WAC, yeah.
Oh, I thought Fresno was in the Mountain West that year.
Well, Fresno was. San Jose State was.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay. But that's still within 5 years. Okay, that's a fair point. So those three teams. But even speaking to that, every team has been successful within the past 6 years, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I don't know. I'm trying to stretch here a little bit.
It wasn't that long ago that UNLV was in a bowl.
Yeah, but that was like their second bowl this century.
Yeah. Well, I think it was their only bowl this century.
I think they went to the Vegas Bowl in 2000, right?
Does that actually count as this century?
Semantics, technically, no. Since 2000, fine.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to take the optimist point of view, you could look at UNLV the same way that we looked at San Diego State. And this was a point that I made on the Media Days podcast. For as successful as San Diego State has been recently, their overall win percentage since they joined the conference 20 years ago is still under 500.
Not good.
You know, Las Vegas is a destination.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting in the money. They're putting forth the resources.
They're getting a gift from the Raiders.
They're getting the recruits. I just don't know if there's one thing you can point to say this is the only other thing they need to do to take that next step forward.
So one quick thing to mention here,
Tony Sanchez has a better winning percentage than his predecessors Bobby Hawk and Mike Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
And not excluding John Robinson, go back to Jeff Horton, 94 to 98, better winning percentage. There's only been two coaches since 1990 that has better winning percentage, Jim Strong and John Robinson. Jim Strong, 386. Stellar there. Tony Sanchez, 333. John Robinson, 400. And also, when you exclude John Robinson, every coach, if my math is correct on this, going back to 1986, assuming they gave up 5-year contracts to each coach, only one has had a longer contract than 5 years.
Hmm.
That's not good.
Not quite.
Just saying. So if you put that in perspective, maybe it is. I know what the new AD said, but I mentioned this before on multiple football basketball podcasts. Do the Mark Stoops route at Kentucky. Kentucky's never been good at football. Not minimal success, like Tim Couch, notwithstanding last year final. You know what I mean? Even Rebels had Randall Cunningham. They've had a couple of good guys, obviously, a couple of good teams. Maybe they should give him, maybe do a 1 year, just do a 1 year extension, even if they go 3-9, and give him that full tenure with Armani Rodgers to see what happens. Maybe that's all they need, because what's the point, again, going 4 or 5 years, new coach. You're repeating the cycle over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So I get if they already, I could see two sides. I could see keeping him around. You have a Rodgers for one more year. Your defense gets under control a lot. They have a lot of guys coming back next year as well, correct? The year after 2020. So maybe it's like, okay, you have everything here to go. Or say, scratch that. Let's bring in a good offensive coordinator or something to coach this offense that could be really good in 2020 as well. So I can see both sides trying to find like the hot OC from who knows, from whatever team. Maybe they can get Mike's, see Utah State as well, Mike Sanford. He gets another head coaching job back at UNLV. They'll get some OC from UCLA or Oregon or, you know what I mean, something like that. Somebody from the Big 12 to come here in talent as a OC to be head coach.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, maybe that could, I wouldn't say that's a bad route either, because you've got your offense, you got the players, now put it in year one. So, but my ultimate opinion, what they should do, I think they should keep him for one more year. But if it's 3-9 bad and they're not close, there's no way they can keep him. You agree? Or what's your thought on that? Is he out? Because the AD's words need to speak, mean something?
Well, I mean, if I were the AD, I would be patient too. Okay. That, I think I just tend toward that in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when you're considering that, you know, because the top end of the schedule is inordinately tough, you know, compared to other teams that are kind of coming from the same position. You know, like obviously New Mexico is going to Notre Dame, but they also get New Mexico State and Liberty. Those are manageable games. Mm-hmm. You know, San Jose State is going to Arkansas, but they also get Tulsa. And
Arkansas is terrible, and they beat them last year.
Yeah, so.
Also, really quick.
I would be patient too, but it's just one of those things where.
Just under $1 million, $950.
Yeah.
So there's that, which is going to get Sanchez. However, as you mentioned, with all the Furtado money coming in, maybe they'll give him time one more year to see what he can do. So I don't know. Each school is different. Each circumstance is different. It's not like New Mexico or CSU, which has a huge buyout where they can't afford to. Under $1 million is nothing for almost any school. And so I could see that way he could be gone. But ultimately, I would say he should stick around unless it's an ultimate disaster. At 3-9, I'd probably lean that way. But let's just say they lose to Nevada by like a late field goal. They lose to CSU, but you know what I mean, like something, a fluky player, it's competitive, and it's just a close loss because it's a back and forth game. It can't be the Rebels of old losing by 30 plus points.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I stand on. If they stick around, if he stays, I could find ways either way. So any last words, or was that our long last words?
Let me throw one last word out there for you, because I picked up the new Football Outsiders Almanac recently.
Good purchase.
Yeah, I was going to say, first of all, if you don't have it, you should buy it immediately.
It's like $10 or something fairly inexpensive, $20?
Something fairly reasonable, yeah.
Okay.
They give UNLV, and this is with win probabilities, right? Which is, I think they use F+ for that, which is basically a combination of the Primo Efficiency Index and S&P+. So it's a combination of the two. They give UNLV a 4% chance to get to 6-6 this year.
That's it.
Is that too high or too low?
Oh, man. You say that again? You say 4%?
4%.
Hold on. Let me take a quick look here. Dude, 4%, that's pretty low. I'm not going to make some weird analogy and think about it. I would say, honestly, from what we said, I'd say that's – do I have to pick higher or lower, or can I say that's about right?
You can say that's about right.
I will do this. I will be a little bit nice. what's the difference between 4% and 7%, Matt? You know what I mean? It's about it's within margin of error, which is not good because that could be 0% as well. But I would not disagree with that. I would, if somebody said, hey, okay, let's rephrase this, Matt. If you say, hey, to me, would you pay, if you say 4%, would you put like $50 down to get a bowl game at 4%? I'd probably take those odds at 4%, just because I think there's anything can happen at 4%. But as for football and watching what they can do on the field, I would still say that's about right.
There's a path.
What's your path? Like, what's the path? What you told us before?
The
like,
path is win on the road. And that path, at least this year, is not going to be easy.
There are only two road games I could see them winning, realistically. Like, I chose Wyoming, but that's a stretch for me. At CSU and at Nevada, that's about it for road games.
Yeah.
So how many road games do they have to win? Three?
Yeah.
Okay. Which three? Are you assuming what you mentioned, Wyoming, CSU, and Nevada?
Yes.
All right. Well, 4%. That's about right, I'd say. I'm just saying. Really quick, win totals for UNLV? 5, according to who's GF, the CG Technology, whoever that is, some casino. Would you take the over or under on that? That means 6 or 4.
I mean, I guess I'd have to take the under.
I'd take the under there, too. So I'm going to be in Vegas. I told you, week one, I'll be there. So if you want me to put some money on the Giants for you. Did you get somebody to do that for you, put a few bucks on the Giants?
I did. I got $20 at 100-1.
You know what I'm ticked about? Utah odds. I should have got it. They're 80-1 national title. They dropped to 50-1 after they were crowned, I'll say, preseason Pac-12 champion.
You missed your chance, dude.
50-1 is still good. I'm going to be there soon, but 80-1? I'm just saying, dang. All right. Well, that's our show tonight. We went quite long for the Rebels. We got two more left. We have Hawaii and Boise State. We'll put up a poll on Twitter, MWC Wire. So check that out in the next day or so. It'll be out, I'm assuming everything goes well. Sorry, Aztec fans, your Blog Talk Radio was being jerks to us for something going wrong because it came out late. So it should be out a week from Sunday. And then, Matt, we have two shows, our mega preview show, and then, twice a week, I guess? Week zero preview?
It's very close.
And look for all of our content coming out. We have a lot of, we still have some OOC previews coming up. We'll have, I still have some fun media day stuff we need to put out there, like, hey, should they go to Vegas for the title game or L.A.? We'll see. TBD. Matt has your pod system out, so that's pretty interesting, which is getting a little traction, right? Pods? People like or don't like pods?
I think so, yeah.
So check all that stuff out, and yeah, we'll be back next time, and next time we talk to you guys, we'll be in the month of football. We'll see you then.